Often imitated, never duplicated. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you now. Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace.
To remind
Process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Welcome to episode 58. Today is April 12th, 2013. I'm Jerry.
I'm Rob.
And I'm Bill.
Yes, we have a special guest with us this evening. Jeremy was deported to his native Finland, so Bill is filling in for him as guest host. Welcome, Bill.
Thanks for having me.
This is actually Bill's second time on the show. We had him on, this was a little over a year ago.
Can I call myself a repeat offender?
Absolutely.
Good.
Yeah, so we are on location once again, of course. We're here at GC Food and Brewery. Send a shout out to them. Thank them for hosting us once again. I also wanted to announce that the MPP has its very own URL shortener. I know you're excited about that.
I am excited.
But I wanted to let our listeners know that, you know, if you're in need of shorter URLs, you are welcome to use it. The address is click.mp, that's C-L-I-K.mp, and it is open to the public. Anybody can use it.
People have told me my URL is too long.
Yeah?
It's kind of a common problem.
And size does matter when it comes to URLs.
Doing great.
Doing great.
Now that we have our own.
How are you doing?
I am great. I'm actually starving right now.
Are you?
Would
you?
I know I'm eyeballing your items.
Take in.
These were free.
We did not order those. They were extras. So somebody just dropped them off.
Hey, that's cool.
Go to it.
I'm going to walk back there and see if they have anything instead.
Because, you know, we're kind of a big deal here now.
I wish I were a big deal.
You're a big deal.
Yeah. All right. So, it's tax time.
It is.
Monday is tax day. And I'm usually enraged at this time every year. But 2013 is, it represents a special milestone. The federal income tax, as we know it, was enacted in 1913. So we've endured 100 years of being tax slaves. And what do we have to show for it?
What did we do before that?
That's a great question. So the first income tax was enacted in 1894 and was immediately declared unconstitutional. So it was repealed immediately. And so it took them a few years to kind of, you know, for all the banksters to get together and work out a way to, you know, slip this in under the radar and, you know, make it all legal-like. So,
Did they wear top hats?
Yes, they were required back then to wear top hats. So there's a great book on this called The Creature from Jekyll Island, if you ever get a chance to read it. It's all about how the income tax was created. A bunch of senators and a bunch of bank presidents met on Jekyll Island, which at the turn of the last century was the place for the elite to hang out. It's off the coast of Georgia, for those of you not familiar with it. And they met there and they planned the Federal Reserve and the Income Tax Act, both of which were passed in 1913.
So they created two conspiracy theories
at
the
same
time.
At the same meeting. Now that's efficiency. I mean, you don't see that kind of efficiency in government
no
today.
Bureaucratic.
We've kind of lost that. Yeah, so in 1913, the top tax bracket was 7%. Today, it's 39.6%. The threshold, so the amount of money you had to make before you were even subject to the income tax, was $11.6 million in 1913. Today, it's $450,000. The tax code itself, when it was first written in 1913, was 400 pages, which is pretty long, in my opinion.
They didn't have typewriters.
Yeah. So, today, we have 74,000 pages of tax code. So, obviously, that's a lot better, right? More is better.
That's a lot of pages.
Who has read that?
Who knows?
CPAs?
Probably no one. Yeah, H&R Block guys. They're the only ones who read the tax code. Oh, and Intuit. So the guys who write TurboTax, they read it.
I bet they're good at their taxes. So when you do, I've asked all of you guys. So when you are doing your taxes and you're filling out your little 1040s,
I don't do taxes.
You do for the podcast. So when you're putting numbers into the 1040, are you fuming?
Usually, yeah.
The whole act of the whole thing is
because I mean, and I'll put a link in the show notes to this story. It was in let me find it here real quick. This was in Forbes magazine, or no, I'm sorry, The Economist. The title is "Filing Taxes: It Shouldn't Be So Hard." It's a story about the billions of dollars that it costs Americans every year to file their taxes, because most people don't file their own anymore. They either use software or they use one of the tax preparers, H&R Block or whatever. So all the time and money that's spent filing taxes. But the story is interesting because companies like Intuit lobby Congress to keep the tax code as complicated as possible, because that's how they make their money.
Of course.
So it's interesting story. I'd encourage our listeners to check that out.
That's the free market at work, baby.
Absolutely.
Do you still have two listeners?
At least.
Where have you built up from there?
Why?
That's what you said back in the day. Last year when I was on, we offended.
Oh, are you worried about offending more than two?
We have quite a few more than that now.
Oh, that's good.
Yes.
Okay. Good. No, I'm not worried about offending them. I just have the thought when I'm filling out my taxes, to answer Rob's question, that no matter what tax bracket I found myself in my long taxpaying career, that the people who make more money than me are somehow paying less taxes. And I have no way of convincing myself that I'm wrong about that. Because the popular media tells me that, whoever pays less than the secretary at work does. I don't have any warm fuzzy that I'm contributing to a better America by stroking out a check or looking at all that I give back. All I have a feeling of is I'm being ripped off.
Right.
So you feel like it's not fair. We know Jerry's crazy thoughts that there shouldn't be such a thing.
Right.
But you have more questions of fairness and who's gaming the system. You think it's a little bit like the standardized test thing, where standardized tests used to, at least back in the day, used to be some kind of measure of school performance or something, and now it's a system that you can game with enough money. If you don't have to work in a pizza shop and your parents can pay for Kaplan standardized test training every Saturday, you're going to do better at the standardized test. It's a system that you can game with money, and the more money you have, the better you are at gaming.
And I don't know that that's necessarily empirically true, but that's how I feel about it. And I don't feel like the money that I do pay in taxes is being used as I have directed the people I voted for to try and enact. I mean, we're currently in this gridlock situation that's been going on for, a million years, and nothing is getting done except people wasting my money arguing about not doing things, right?
Right.
I mean, all I'm hearing is XYZ and ZYX and nothing getting done. And that may actually be better for us economically. I don't know for certain.
So,
but
a lot. You're supposed to be liberal like me, Bill. Let me down.
I like paying taxes if I know
just what your soundbite right there.
What they're going for,
right?
Like I vote for every school reform thing in my area, right, neck of the woods, because I know that I believe those people are going to make good choices about that. They may not, but I think that.
Right.
So when you look at the raw percentages, like I have an Excel spreadsheet that I run because I'm too lazy to buy the tax software, or cheap.
I think it's lazy. I think it's much harder.
It's much more cheap than lazy. So, and I do a percentage of the tax, like my tax refund, I guess, versus what my W-2 says I made. Mm-hmm. And the percentage doesn't seem so bad.
Really?
I mean, does the percentage seem bad to you? Like, do you ever just calculate what percentage is leaving you?
Yeah.
Does it seem bad?
Absolutely.
Okay, so you're saying not what the tax rate is, but what the total dollars is versus what your W-2
I'm just saying,
taxable income
I'm
is?
I'm saying the rate doesn't seem so bad, I guess. It just seems like what it is.
Well,
and this is the kind of the lie of the whole thing, is because you get this whole refund thing and you think you're getting a check when you're not really.
Yeah.
And it's not like if they just withheld nothing and then they said, here, write me a check, that, you know, and you thought you made a lot more than you did, you know, that would probably make people a lot more honest about what's going on with the tax code.
Yeah. So you said, I lost my train of thought.
It's because my point was so compelling.
It was.
It was. He's no longer an anarchist, ladies and gentlemen. He's a liberal.
I guess when I look at the percentages, I think it's not so bad.
Well, okay, so are you one of these people that, you know, believe that taxes are the price you pay for civilization?
Yeah, that one. I'm that guy.
I'm kind of the camp that I'm paying Tammany Hall to waste my money so I can feel like I have a civilization that I'm paying for. If that, you know, it's like a construct that's been established from time immemorial that these people are going to get my money and waste it, but yet allocate some of it just enough, the bare minimum, that I won't lose faith in the fact that I still need to give them my money.
All right, well, that's encouraging. So to answer your question before about what do we do before the income mm-hmm. tax, so the Constitution provides for imposts, excises, and fees.
Okay.
Which are all taxes mm-hmm. of various types. But they're mainly imposed on external things, you know, like imports into the country. You know, we used to tax imports fairly heavily. That's where a lot of our income came from. Excises are, you know, fees that businesses would pay for the privilege to operate within the United States. And, you know, and then other various fees. So, I mean, this country existed for 150-something years mm-hmm. without an income tax,
mm-hmm.
and we still had roads, we still had a military that, you know, managed to win, like, 8 wars, and, you know, so the income tax is not required for all of the things that government does, because government was doing a lot of those things prior to 1913.
Right. Not everything. I mean, let's admit there
perhaps was not, but were those things really necessary? If we were getting by for 150 years without them,
you know,
could we have gotten by another 150 years without them?
I'm not willing to give up free Wi-Fi at McDonald's. Let's just get that out there. I want some level of service from my government and my eating establishment.
Right.
Which GCC
yes.
provides.
Free Wi-Fi here at GCC Food and Brewery.
Yeah, there you go. But, so I want roads. But, you know, 5 years ago, everybody told me I had to go out and buy a more fuel-efficient car. Right. Because I was going to save the world. So I got a more fuel-efficient car.
Right.
And then I said, now you sick bastard, you're not paying enough in gas tax.
Right.
So we got to raise your gas tax.
Right.
I want to know where did the money go? You know, what's being done? I don't see much better. Now,
where does it stop?
Yeah, when is the end? And number one, could we just make it so everybody paid the same damn basic percentage and there was no industry and it just came out of my check, and I didn't have to have... April 15th was just another day.
Right.
And it was just... There's so much of it that's wrong. I feel like it's the same thing as, like, there's so much of it that's wrong with, like, Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and all those other things that we need to reform, but it's like a lightning rod, so nothing will ever get done, you know? Sorry to drop off my liberal side of the fence, but I'll pay more taxes
if
I know it's going to make us better.
Right.
And I don't feel that way.
And it does seem like a pointless exercise. It's like, when you're filling it out, don't they already know what you owe?
Yes.
You know, so
that was
like,
another point that was made in that story, was that the IRS already knows all the numbers.
Right, right.
It's like, why can't they just, you know,
right. and it's
do the math? And
I see it in my daily life with certain a-hole types that I know. It's a pattern. They force you to tell them what they already know,
yeah.
and then ridicule you when you get it wrong. You know,
right.
that happens at work all the time, and that's
right.
what the IRS does. Like I know what your taxes are. Let's see if you know what.
That's
they
right.
are.
Let's right. see if you can figure it out.
Right.
But not only can they act like an asshole. They throw you in jail. They take your stuff.
Right.
They,
right.
You know, there's a lot of bad stuff. I don't know. Do we still have, like, tax agents that go around and investigate
people? Oh, yes. Absolutely.
And stuff? Why don't we just stop funding that? You know, or why don't we just go over to after the tax bad taxpayer?
There are armed IRS agents. They are part of the Criminal Investigation Division. They carry a badge and a gun.
They probably have access to every bit of data about everyone, no questions asked.
Sure. Yep.
Pick an uplifting topic.
I'm not in an uplifting mood, Rob. Let's get that out there. I'm paying my taxes this week, you know.
I get a refund, the government's paying me back.
Yeah, right. They're giving you back the money that they've had for a year at no interest.
It is true. It's hard not to buy into the illusion that, like, my salary feels like what I... It's what feels like my post-tax dollars.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really feel like I really earn my pre-tax dollars and it's getting taken away from me. I just think that's what I earn.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, and that's what's so insidious about the withholding.
Right, right.
Because it, you know, you don't even question it, and it, you know, it makes it feel good when you get the refund. You're like, woo, free money!
Right, your Coast Statue of Liberty's on it. She's all happy, smiling at me.
Dumbass, it was your money to begin with. You gave a no interest loan to the government.
And I don't even mind giving a no interest loan. Right, to me, that's another form of enforced savings.
Right.
You know, if I was giving an extra $20,000, or, you know, if I was a millionaire and it was millions, I would be pissed. But, you know, I get an extra $300 back
right.
or something, or maybe I owe $300. You know, it's not that big of a deal. It's just the fact that when you look at that total ginormo number at the bottom of that tax form, you're like, I don't remember using that many services.
Right.
I don't feel like I deserve this bill. Oh boy.
Alright, so another story that's gotten a little bit of attention recently was this video that a host on MSNBC posted. Her name is Melissa Harris Perry, who I'd never heard of her before this video, but I know this has been going viral on Facebook and a lot of other places. And I got a link in the show notes. It says, all your kids belong to us.
Allow me to introduce my friend Melissa.
Yes, go ahead,
okay,
Rob.
So Melissa Harris Perry is some professor at Tulane. She does a weekend show on MSNBC where she talks about liberal things for hours on end. I've never seen it. I probably wouldn't recommend seeing it. So let me see if I can characterize this video. I wrote some notes.
We have never invested as much in public education as we should have, because we've always had kind of a private notion of children. Your kid is yours and totally your responsibility. We haven't had a very collective notion of these are our children. So part of it is we have to break through our kind of private idea that kids belong to their parents or kids belong to their families and recognize that kids belong to whole communities. Once it's everybody's responsibility and not just the households, then we start making better investments.
Woo! Yeah,
that's something.
Isn't the word collective in there somewhere?
Yeah, I said collective. I like to say the word collective because I'm a liberal. There's no collective notion of our children.
Right.
Okay, so here's how I come. Man, all the lefties are turning right here on this crazy day.
I'm in a bad mood. What can I say?
So this is here's how lefty liberal me comes across that. Is that complete? I completely disagree with that whole concept. Your kid is your responsibility, and it's like the number one responsibility. You have this hierarchy of responsibility, and first is kid, and kid and wife. You know,
right.
They're kind of like battling for one and two somehow. You know, and after that comes everything else. Then comes the rest of your family, and then it comes the rest of your responsibilities. And somewhere in there is your country and civic duties,
right?
And then your moral responsibility to your fellow humans. You know, there's a little hierarchy in there, and so I guess I don't disagree with the concepts in there, but this idea that there's no sense of relation there, that it is my job as someone with a child to let their upbringing be handled by everyone else, and it's also my job to handle everyone else's upbringing. Like, I just completely disagree. Now, all that being said, now it turns out that I'm a quite lucky individual, and I'm not scraping the bottom of the barrel, and I do buy stupid things with my money, and I believe some of that money should go to providing an education for all kids, regardless of income or upbringing or that sort of thing. So I believe in that. But she's like, she's swiping out the whole hierarchy of that responsibility and saying that should be the top priority. Come on, Melissa.
Right. Well, okay. So, you know, my objection to it is she could have just paraphrased the whole "it takes a village" meme, and you know, it wouldn't have been quite so bad. Like, you know, I don't necessarily agree with the "it takes a village" philosophy either, but you know, that wouldn't have been so beyond the pale. But I mean, I would go so far as to say the ideas she espouses in this video are evil. I mean, she just went full bore evil.
I'll go evil.
Evil. Where does evil come up?
Well, because I mean, to not only imply but to just flat out state that your kids don't belong to you, that they are a resource of society, and that society should have, you know, a say in how they're raised, how they're educated, how they're, you know, how they're assimilated into the society. I mean, all of that is evil.
Right. She says we have this private notion of the children and this idea that your kid is yours and totally your responsibility.
That's exactly the way it's supposed to work.
Your kids are totally your responsibility.
Yes.
Now, if everybody, if we don't have any ability for people to look outside their own tiny little world and see how other kids and other families are doing, then I think we got a pretty savage society as well. I would say that's equally as evil. But to state it so baldly there was just was quite something.
Yeah, it was.
I guess I just think the whole thing is I'm missing the evil, but I'm totally getting the fact that it's so left that it's communist. I'm thinking communism.
And how is communism not evil?
I'm saying it's a political theory. I'm not saying that it's Satan worship. Right?
Okay, so I'll give you that.
It was wrong, and it is wrong to me, but it's not. There's no stabbing of children and eating their feet, and you know, no burning of things, and it's
killing puppies.
And exactly.
And I will say, as a good old liberal, like, When I saw it, first thing I thought was like, oh my God, I can't believe she said that. But second thought was, hey, at least she's honest.
Yeah.
You know, I wish if that's a left leaning liberal commentator, I would like to see a equally right wing, conservative commentator give the same concise speech about how they felt about education.
Right.
And what would that look like? You know, we just don't see that. What would that look like?
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and do it. Rob Harris Perry, he's the new conservative on Fox News. I mean, I think it would be like, I don't care about educating your kid. My job is to educate my own kid.
Yeah.
And if your kid, if you haven't done what you needed to do to make enough money to educate your kid, that's your own fault and it's your own kid's fault. And when that kid doesn't have the education, you're going to have to pay the consequences because my kid's getting educated.
There would be some of that, but I think it would be more along the lines of, this is a Christian country. We were founded on, godly principles. So your kid's going to be raised as a Christian and he's going to be,
Right, right.
That is theocracy. That's the
right.
goal.
Right. Yeah, you would either get the, I don't care about your kid, or you would get your kid must be Christian.
Right.
And the reason why we're having troubles in the country is your kid's not Christian.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's the thing that frightens me about that comment. It's not the collective part of it. It's not that it isn't like a good idea to keep an eye out to make sure other people's children are
right.
safe
right.
or healthy
that's
or
common
being
sense.
Closed or fed or something. But the part of it that annoys the crap out of me is, no one has proven to me yet that they can take care of my kids as well as I can take care
right,
of my
right,
kids.
Right. Yeah.
So when I send them to public school, I'm not very trusting, and I'm there all the time checking up to make sure things are happening my way, not their way.
Right.
I don't even leaving my kids with grandma for too long because I know things ain't going my way there,
Yeah.
So that's the part of it that's insidious to me, is that she's implying that her and her Tulane liberal brethren can take care of my kid better than me,
right.
when I know that no one gives a damn about my kids more than
well,
I do.
Well, and we might be getting somewhere here, because I don't think this is the... It's right-wing night here. This is the fault of the liberal philosophy. It's because she's not saying that other people can take better care of your kids than you. She's saying you could take better care of other people's kids. It's a one-way street in that situation. That you have, if you have a bell curve of parenting ability, you're on the good end. You know how to parent. These other people don't know how to parent, and it's your job to go do some parenting. It's not that these other people can parent better than you because you're on the low
end. That's a real slippery slope, though, because like one crappy day with the principal's office, and then all of a sudden I'm on the wrong end of the bell curve.
Right.
And now my
right.
kids can be better taken care of by people who couldn't do as good a job last week.
Right.
You know,
right.
I don't know, and I am almost, and I'm sure he's really close to me physically, I am almost of the it takes a village kind of from a we should all be watching out for each other type thing, right?
I don't disagree with that.
You know, I find it weird to me, like the other parents in the neighborhood, like my kid falls off his bike, they don't pick him up, scrape him up, wipe them off and bring them home.
Right.
I do that to everybody else's kid,
right.
but that doesn't always happen for mine.
Yeah.
But so I feel like a moral responsibility to keep the clouds away and rainbows in my neighborhood so that we can all live better lives. But I don't believe that I think she's arguing for the collective parenting, right? And when she says collective, to me, that means like everybody's an indentured servant living on a factory farm, and we're all wearing gray, and we're all, eating the same 6 grains of rice every day.
Right.
That's what it means to me. And that by me allowing my kids Wi-Fi access for good report cards, am somehow not a good
right.
Right.
So, I don't know. I should drop it.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying the right things, but for the liberal side today.
No, you're all right.
Yeah, it does seem like it's I sense the what I was saying before, the right wing feeling like everything is sucking away from people who are doing things correctly.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're parenting, if you have one parent who's parenting and one parent who's doing nothing, then it's your job as an American to go and start doing some parenting. You know, it's the endless sucking away of doing it right, which is right back to the taxes thing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, my wife and I have seriously considered in a few years adopting a child, not because we feel like we need another kid on our roof, but maybe there's some poor schmuck that doesn't have the privileges of white bread America that maybe we could, you know, make that, help that poor kid. You know, I feel that kind of moral responsibility to other people's children. Or, you know, like, we barely go into the public school without bringing in school supplies or donating to some cause or doing something there to try and help make other people's lives better. We try to raise socially conscious children that are trying to feed the homeless and, you know, collect canned goods and all that stuff. But she's really just telling me that, you know, oh, by the way, there's this factory that we could send your kids off to and feed them gruel and they would be better off.
Yeah.
And you would be better off if you let us do that.
If you let us insert them into the Matrix.
Exactly. It's kind of like a combination of the Matrix and Oliver. You know what I mean?
That's right. That's what it is.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll cover some listener feedback and maybe a couple other topics. So stay with us. To point out something that happened in the last month that kind of got my my hackles up. CNN has started a new podcast. They call it The Big Three, and it's a liberal, a conservative, and a moderate talking about current events. Now, come on. We've been doing this podcast for almost 2 years now, and CNN has just blatantly ripped us off.
Without a credit, right?
Without any credit.
They didn't say special thanks to the MPP.
And so, you know, then I call out John Avalon on Twitter, and he just completely ignored us. Now, what's up with that?
Come on, John.
Come on.
Give credit where credit's
due.
That's
right. We invented this format. Just admit it. We'll let you share. I mean, there's
just a little tip of the hat.
There's plenty of room in cyberspace for all of us.
Jerry will not be ignored, you know.
That's right. I will just continue to stalk you on Twitter until you admit.
And plus, why a moderate? Why not an anarchist?
Yeah, exactly.
And who cares about moderates?
Right. Moderates are so wishy-washy.
So moderate.
So middle of the road.
It's like lukewarm water, right?
Take that, CNN.
That's right. Okay, so there was a story on This American Life recently that Rob wanted to talk about.
Yeah, if you can find it, the show is called Trends with Benefits, which is an awesome
I'll put a
title.
Link in the show notes.
There will be a... Will it have a URL shortener?
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course, it'll have...
Click MP.
Click MP. got to plug the CNN have a URL shortener?
No, they do not.
Take that. So it was by one of the reporters, Hannah Jaffe Walt, and I've always just wanted to say that, and I've never had a reason to until now.
She's also on Planet Money.
She is a Planet Money.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it was all about
Hannah.
Hannah. It was all about. I was before I get into this. I was in my car doing NPR impressions. You want to hear some of them?
Sure.
Yes.
All right. I got two good ones. I do the sign offs. Are you ready? Here's my first one.
Wait.
Here we go. No, we don't want to see this. All right. Here it is. It's Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Paris. That was that one.
Yes.
And my next one is. Well, Fabia Quist-Arkton, NPR News, Daka! Alright.
Yeah, Eleanor Beardsley always sounds like she has just been completely put upon to file a report. It's like, Eleanor Beardsley, NPR, Paris.
Yes. But hey, she speaks French. I kind of have a thing for Eleanor Beardsley. I looked her up online.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I did.
Eleanor Beardsley. I actually like hearing her talk because at least she has something other than a Midwestern blend.
Right, and so much pitch variation. Yeah. Nicolas Sarkozy went to the Paris, right? I'm like, oh, I don't know what's happening, but things are happening. Yeah. All right, so back to Hannah. So she did a whole thing on disability, which is probably the most depressing This American Life will ever hear. And for a show that tends to be pretty depressing, that's saying something. It starts out by investigating a county in Alabama where 1 in 4 people are on disability. And the only employment in that county were things where manual labor was required. There was a fish factory or elderly care. And so people that had back pain or whatever their issue was, they couldn't find any other job that they could do that didn't require manual labor, so the doctor would put them on disability. And sure enough, they put them on disability. You never get off disability. It's a one-way street, partly because there's no incentive to get back to work. If you're having trouble finding a job, you already are drawing a paycheck. And once you start working, you got to give up the disability. So people stay on it until they transition to the other disability program, Social Security. And then the people that are on the disability don't show up in the jobless numbers. And so it's like this hidden, festering problem of, you know, we're complaining about taxes, and we complain about why does Missouri have a state aquatic animal? Bill's new complaint. Well, the state aquatic animal is a tiny piece of the pie chart compared to the disability roles that are ever increasing.
It's the paddlefish, by the way.
It is the paddlefish. And it talks about how this during the Bill Clinton welfare to work program intentionally put welfare recipients more responsibilities on the state. Woohoo! State's rights, right? Well, the state then hired outside consulting firms to try to push these welfare people onto disability because that's a federal program and it gets them off the state rolls. So good job, free market, right?
Yes.
It's horrible. And so the thing I got out of the whole story, it's our country in a nutshell, which is maybe where it belongs. A nutshell. I know.
But
that's a little Austin Powers for you. It's a lot of bureaucracy and well-meaning intentions mixed with a free market incentivized system put together to create a total poo storm. And that's what it is. Nobody's doing anything wrong. It's just like the healthcare. Nobody's doing anything wrong in the healthcare system. Everybody's trying to do something that's good. The drug companies are trying to make their profits. Everything is coming together, and it's all combining in a way that's absolutely awful. So,
yeah.
So check it out. Feel bad about the country. But you'll feel bad about the country in a brand new way, I guess. Get sick of the whole, like, why does Obama still have a limo, you know?
Right.
Get off that Obama has a limo thing, oh, he has a vacation. Get off the right-wing complaints and get off your left-wing, oh, we don't have enough money for the school, and start tackling the stuff that's obviously screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Preach on,
brother.
All right.
Don't you think it's an interesting side note to that, though? An NPR story this week, too, about the legal influence in the law industry that's built around getting people on getting disability.
Right.
There's some guy who started the whole industry.
Yep, Bender, right?
Yeah, that guy, yeah. And he wears a cowboy hat and tells everybody else.
Right, so is he doing anything? Is he doing anything wrong?
No, he's probably.
And is the idea that if you are unable to work, that there should be some public safety net to handle that? There's nothing wrong with that either. You put those two things together and you get crap. I don't know. Morose this episode.
Yeah.
Somebody give us an uplifting topic.
Yeah.
Well, we can talk about some listener feedback. So in response to our Knives on Airplanes on the Street interview that we did last time, our listener Chuck left this comment on our website. He says, I agree with the new TSA small knife policy, which is quite limited. No more than a short length and width, and no blades that lock into their open position. The odds of a terrorist planning to use a 2.25-inch knife to take over a plane are minuscule. As far as some crazy person, there are other methods for him or her, and we can't 100% protect against everything a crazy person might do.
Yay, listener feedback. That makes me happy.
Yeah. Thanks, Chuck. We appreciate that. I completely disagree with you, but...
I guess I missed the whole thing. I must have missed a bunch of news or something. I wasn't listening to MPP as much as I should.
Well, so the TSA changed their policy on small knives. They're now allowing them on aircraft. And we were kind of lampooning that in the last episode with one of our on-the-street interviews where we were asking people, do you think TSA was right in their decision to allow knives on airplanes? And I think the people we interviewed were unanimous in their opinion that was wrong. I don't know that it matters all that much, but, you know, I'm coming from the angle that, you know, the TSA was created essentially to prevent another 9/11. And 9/11 occurred because a bunch of guys got on a plane with box cutters and killed the flight crew and took over the airplane. And so now we're saying it's okay for them to get on the plane with small knives again. I think you can kill an air crew with a small knife, even if it's not a box cutter.
Yeah.
So
how come I can bring my small knife on, but I can't bring more than, what is it, 1.5 ounces of gel shampoo?
Because one makes a bomb and one you just stab around.
Well, here's what
kinda
I
like
mean.
Being in college.
I don't think Oh, God. I'm speechless at that.
Yes.
But I don't think a 9/11 induced with box cutters will probably happen again. Do I think that we'll be terrorism-free for the next 200 years in the United States? No. But I think people are pissed now, right? And ain't going to take that crap.
Yeah.
They're going to, I think, you know, there's going to be big people rushing the guy that's trying to stir up crap on an airplane now. But
yeah,
I'd like to get rid of the TSA, but that's not like I'd like to introduce chainsaws in the cruise station or, you know, in the cockpit or whatever.
Well, obviously, you know, I'm of the school of thought that says let them take any weapon they want on the airplane. So, because, you know, you have the right to be armed whether you're on an airplane or not.
You have a right to be armed, like, in a school?
I think so. I don't think you give up your basic human right to self-defense no matter where you are.
That's why I'm a ninja, because I don't have to carry a weapon.
Are you a registered ninja?
I failed the background check.
All right, so, yeah, I mean, he said the odds of a terrorist planning to use a 2.25-inch knife to take over a plane are minuscule.
Agreed.
Maybe, but it's still a weapon. And, you know, I just think that this is somewhat hypocritical when we've lived through the last 12 years of the TSA supposedly disarming us to the extreme. I mean, we can't even take nail clippers on board an airplane now. I know that policy has changed also, but, you know, really, what's different? Have the terrorists forgotten how to cut people's throats with knives? Like, in the intervening years, that knowledge was lost? I don't understand.
It's like the Dark Ages. Right. Yeah, yeah. The Dark Ages are very interesting. I don't disagree with you, but you're seeming to say that we've set in place this really expensive, foolish construct.
Yes.
And we should not allow that foolish construct to wither on the vine by taking away all the things that they said no to.
No, I think this just illustrates how foolish the construct is. That we said 12 years ago, you can't even bring nail clippers on, and now 12 years later we're saying, yeah, you can bring small knives.
Yeah, I think it's friends don't let friends be TSA agents is what, you know, I'm sure they're all well-meaning people, but the whole thing is out of control and bad, so I don't know that. You know, like, the week I went on my honeymoon, they instituted the no nail clipper thing, and that was not on their website of things you couldn't bring. They made my wife cry on my way to my honeymoon because they threw away her nail clipper because we were a threat to society.
And they took your hairspray, too, right?
Well, they took, well, yeah, somehow she knew about that, but she didn't know about the nail clippers crying on your honeymoon. Not a good thing.
Yeah, that
probably happened to Rob, but you know, to me, I wasn't expecting that.
Man. You're a mean drunk, Bill.
I've had half a beer. I'm just mean this week.
Okay, so do we have any stories in the reading room we want to highlight?
Read them all.
Read them all. Got quite a few. One that I wanted to draw attention to because I thought it was interesting. 10 things most Americans don't know about America.
Ooh, and some. I love a countdown.
Yeah.
This, well, it's told from the perspective of an American citizen who has spent quite a bit of time overseas, living in other countries, kind of, you know, absorbing the culture of other countries. And he comes back and he says, hey, you know what, Americans? Overseas people either, A, don't care that you're an American, or two, they don't care that you're an American.
Right.
You're not all that, you know. So,
right.
So when you're traveling abroad, don't, you know, just don't think that you're, you know, God's gift to the planet.
That's fair.
He lists a few other observations that he's made in his travels. I just thought it was interesting, though. I think it would do everybody good to read that. Because, you know, other countries don't hate us just because of our freedom or just because we're Americans.
Right, right.
They, in general, they just don't care.
Right.
You know, they don't think about us.
Yeah, and the concrete example that always comes up is was the nationalism of Iraqis under Saddam.
Right.
Like, we never thought that they could love their own country, even if it was a cruddy country or they had its problems. Like, the idea, we just had the idea that we're so much better, so of course they would want to be more like. Right, right. But no, they felt strong about, like, nationalism is everywhere. If you're French, you're pretty happy about being French or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
If you're Italian, you like being, you know, we think our American pride is like just because we happen to be awesome, you know, that we're not just into ourselves like everyone else is.
Right.
But do you walk around feeling like you're superior nationally because you're an American?
Yeah.
Really? Okay. I guess I must have missed that. I just don't have it. I mean, I love this country, and I wouldn't live anywhere else. But I don't feel like I'm somehow superior to the Cypriots.
Right? You can go back a few podcast episodes where you would get some real time listener feedback.
That's right. America is the greatest country on earth, Bill. And if you don't like it, I'll help you pack.
we got some of that. So
really?
We got that in this very bar. From
we might have been sitting right here.
Yeah, really? Might have been at this very table.
Wow,
which is not a couple episodes ago.
Right.
Okay, so a couple other stories here. Fisker Automotive. Are you familiar with them? Company that was trying to build electric vehicles, all electric vehicles. Fisker received some $500 million in guaranteed government loans. In a story that kind of echoes the whole Solyndra scandal from last year. And so they've laid off, they're about to file for bankruptcy, and they've laid off 75% of their workforce. And all of the employees apparently have turned around and hired the law firm that sued Solyndra when they did the same thing. So I thought that was interesting.
Well, what's the Beeb going to do? I mean, the only person I know who owns a Fisker is Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
So where's he going to get it serviced?
I don't know.
I understand, but you know. Yeah, he's not going to get it serviced. But do we have to? Okay, so they got $500 million from the government to start this. How many?
I don't think they were given the entire 500. That was the maximum that they could ask for. I think they only ended up getting like 200 million.
Okay.
But you know, they've blown through that, and
okay. So now, they have like a line of credit with the Treasury or something. Okay.
Right.
But I mean, you do have to. I don't know why we're in that business anyway.
Exactly. Why is the government trying to pick winners and losers?
Correct.
That's
the moral or governmental mistake. But
yeah,
if you're going to do that, you're going to bet on a fair number of losers right now.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that we're not pointing out that some company we lent money to did well. I don't know that I've ever heard of one.
There must be one. There's probably an example out there. Yeah. Maybe if our listeners want to send us one, that would be great. But I haven't come across one myself.
Maybe they were killed by the government bureaucracy of keeping their loan payments current. I don't know.
So, real quick, two other stories that have kind of been big in the last month since we had our last episode. Bitcoin. And we've talked about Bitcoin on the show in the past. It's kind of been, since the beginning of this year, it's been enjoying a renaissance of sorts. It was at like $9 at the first of the year.
Remind us what Bitcoin is.
Okay, for those who don't know what Bitcoin is, it's a digital currency that exists only online, and it's not backed by any government. It's not something that can be traced, so it's like cash, but it has all the convenience of a credit card because you can buy things online with it, and you know. So it's been in use for several years now, but it's just been in the last several months that the value of Bitcoins have started to really skyrocket. And like I said, it was at $9 at the beginning of the year, and then like in February it went up to $20, and then in March it went up to $100, and then a couple of weeks later it was at $200. And today, I think it's at 72. So there's a lot of people saying that bubble has already burst.
The stock of Bitcoin, the company?
The actual exchange rate. Like one Bitcoin was exchanging for $235 at its peak.
Can I buy with it? Just like funny cat gifts? Or can I
buy? There was a Bitcoin store online. I say was. There still is a Bitcoin store where you can buy stuff. A lot of businesses had started to accept it. Online merchants as well as brick and mortar stores were accepting it for purchases. So, you know. It's not like it's collapsed completely. It's right. Still available. But I just think it's interesting. I saw, you know, there was a Planet Money episode, and I'll link to that in the show notes about it. And I also saw it on CNN this week. They were talking about how it's, you know, going through the roof. and then just a couple days later, it's crashed. It's
back under the roof.
Yeah. Although, still, $72 is, you know, eight times what it was in January, so it's...
Why do we need such a thing? I mean...
That's a good question, and, you know, there have been a lot of critics of Bitcoin saying that it's only used for illegal activity, you know, because there's a website called the Silk Road where you can buy drugs online, and that's the currency of choice for the Silk Road is Bitcoin. But, I mean, you use it primarily to, if you have transactions that you don't want traced. And there's a lot of legitimate reasons for that, beyond, you know, any kind of illicit trading that might be going on. But it's a, you know, it's a currency that can't be counterfeited. It's,
well, yeah, because there's nothing that...
It's designed by a software engineer such that it could not be counterfeited. So, you know, it's the digital equivalent of gold. The only other story I wanted to mention real quickly was Cyprus, because that was pretty big in the news this cycle. And I just thought it was interesting. I got a link in the show notes to this story. Cyprus readies capital controls to avert bank run. For those who didn't hear about it, all the banks in Cyprus were, in order to comply with the terms of a bailout from the European Central Bank, they were going to have to give a haircut, that's what they were calling it, to all of the private depositors in all the banks. So anybody that had a savings account in Cyprus was going to lose a certain percentage of the cash they had in the bank just off the top. And all that money was going to be used to stabilize their economy. And, you know, that's the Rubicon there. I mean, once you cross that, what's to stop every other country on Earth from saying, hey, you guys, you know, what do you need savings for? You're not using that money. It's just sitting there. Let's put that money to work and, you know, make our economy stronger.
It's the old storm cloud of the...
Yeah. But the fact that, you know, they're actually going to do it, that's what's disturbing. It's one thing to talk about it, but to actually act on that and, you know, make it happen, that's kind of disturbing. And
and then when the news came out that they were going to do that, they knew everybody would come get their money out.
Right, so they closed the banks down for a week.
Sorry.
And then when they reopened them, they put restrictions on how much you could withdraw from ATMs and how many times a week you could withdraw money.
Right. I'm putting my money in Bitcoins.
All right. Fair enough. Yeah, I don't have any Bitcoins.
I might go live with my brother-in-law in his silver stash.
They might go up again. Because, you know, I think it was about 2 years ago they had another little run where they went up to like $40 or something and then they came back down. So this isn't the first time that this has happened, but...
How does one make Bitcoin? So can I ask my employer to pay me in Bitcoin?
You can download some software that will mine them. It does some kind of... It figures out some complicated... puzzles, mathematical puzzles that take years to figure out, you know, on a normal computer. If you've got some kind of supercomputer that can, you know, crank these math problems out in a matter of days or whatever, you might be able to mine them faster.
Can I pay my own power bill for the supercomputer to mine them?
Maybe.
Okay. So is this doing some... What's it doing with these mathematical puzzles? Is it figuring out how to find aliens or what?
No, once it finds a solution, it generates the unique numerical string that represents a Bitcoin. And then you can add that to your wallet.
So it's just more like an endurance test.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, public key encryption.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's related to that. It's computing I don't know if it's actually computing very large prime numbers, but it's something akin to that as far as the complexity of the problem.
But it doesn't...
And then there's a peer-to-peer registry of all Bitcoins. So all the Bitcoins that have ever been mined, you know, in the last 5 years or whatever that they've existed, are you know, added to this online registry. So, like, you can't counterfeit them because they only exist on this register. So you can't just, like, make up a number because it won't be on the list. So that's why you can't counterfeit them.
I know we're going to get into this. Well, there's nothing behind the U.S. currency sale
exactly.
story. But, and I completely understand that, but it still seems odd to me. That
it does.
You can just create money.
And it's kind of interesting, too, the story behind it, because, like, nobody knows who invented this software. Like, the guy used a pseudonym, and nobody knows who he really is.
Well, that makes it even worse. I mean, how does the conspiracy theory brain that not get triggered by this currency that's only generated by solving complicated math problems and has no traceability? And how do we know this guy's not going to take all the bitcoins and go buy funny cat toys or whatever? Going to buy like billions of dollars worth of them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, once it generates this string. It, you know, you own it. It's in a file that only exists on your computer.
Oh, okay.
And then, you know, there have been people who have had their Bitcoin stolen. Mm-hmm. Like, there's malware that out there that will...
Oh, come and get your Bitcoin?
It searches your computer for Bitcoins and steals them. So if you generate any yourself, you're supposed to, like, put them on a thumb drive or put them on a computer that's not attached to the internet, you know.
This internet currency can't be attached to the internet, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, you only use it when you're ready to buy something.
Buy some pot or
so,
whatever.
I mean, it's a lot like cash in that respect.
Yeah.
You don't leave cash just laying out where anybody can grab it.
And it doesn't fit in my USB port. But how do you know that, and this is my, God, conspiracy theory brain kicking in again. How do you know we're not all part of the complex algorithm, you know, by... solving these math puzzles for this person who's going to use this to
for this multinational corporation that's actually producing Bitcoin.
That plans to rule the tri-state area or something are being enabled by us.
I can't rule that out.
Okay, that's where I'm going with that. And I don't believe a word of it, but I'm just saying, how do you know?
All right. Well, I want to thank Bill for joining us tonight as our guest host. It was a pleasure. I want to thank GC for hosting us once again. And I want to thank our listeners for tuning in and checking out the show. Send us your feedback. You can send us email. You can leave us a comment on our website or on Facebook. Send us a tweet on Twitter. And we'll be happy to respond to any of your comments. So that's all we got. We'll see you next time.
See you next time.
Bye now.
Bye now. I didn't know the story.
It's okay.
Sorry. He's pointing at me and
I was giving you the order of the goodbyes.
I didn't know what I was supposed to say.
Just say whatever.
Okay, well, you kept pointing at me like that. I was supposed to know a canned thing. And we can do that again if you want. But
okay. So we'll see you next time.
Bye now.
Bye.